These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is 11 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to Tuesday afternoon here. Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Skyline Studio on this, the Wintrust Business Lunch. Lori Lightfoot is in her first full day of power as the mayor of the city of Chicago. How's she doing so far? Probably a pretty early to check, but we'll talk later today with Margaret Mueller. She is the CEO of the Executives Club of Chicago to get a view from the executive suite to see what they expect from the Lightfoot administration, also what they're seeing so far from Governor Pritzker. Like to start on Tuesdays with a check on Wall Street. John Najarian is here from CNBC and the Najarian Family Office. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Great to be back with you.
Okay, so what are we talking about first? Huawei, the Chinese trade wars, or I mean, what's driving the market? I would imagine that's what's fueling the increase, at least at the start today.
It certainly is. Reversal, much like reversals that we've seen in policy that happen so very quickly. It's not played out over weeks. It's just played out over minutes. And that's what happened today when basically yesterday's blacklisting of Huawei, meaning that U.S. companies could not supply them, that really hit the chip makers yesterday. Xilinx, Intel, Qualcomm, Qorvo, all those hit very hard yesterday. And then today, it was announced that there's going to be a 90-day period before any of those bans go into effect. And so all those chip stocks just come roaring back. Tech sector's hot. And, it's just a risk-on day, as we like to say.
Well, is this something that was designed all along, that they were going to back off a little bit today or give the extension today? Or do you think this is a policy that wasn't set when it was announced?
It's impossible to know. Until we get at some point down the line much further, we won't know whether this was part of a plan or if this was just a reaction to many of those stocks. Even though our market didn't collapse yesterday, many of those stocks were hit very hard. And, of course, Google announced that they were going to drop Huawei from the Android phones even.
And that's
a big deal.
That was all in reaction to yesterday's announcement that today was put off 90 days.
Exactly. Yeah. And so this is very similar to when the U.S. announced that it was going to put sanctions back on Iran and we were going to block their crude oil sales. And we did. But then we granted waivers to Japan and a number of other countries that actively buy from Iran. So it's whenever you do these waivers, whether it's an extension before the penalties would kick in or whatever, it creates a lot of volatility and turbulence. And that's exactly what policy, the way it was executed, did this time.
All right, so that's the sunny side of the street when it comes to the China trade issue. But Xi Jinping is on the other side of the street, and he says he's in for a new long march, indicating that they're not going to give, and this could be quite an ordeal. What do you make of that?
That's just as blustering as it is on our side when we think that we're not going to deal with China. They cannot afford to not deal with us, nor can we afford not to deal with them. So in both cases, it's just a question of, okay, who feels the most pain first and blinks? Thus far, since their market was down 24% last year, the Chinese market, that is, and a number of factories reduced production dramatically, and they were already starting to lose out to Vietnam and other cheap producing areas of the world. They can't really afford, Stephen, quite frankly. It's been my thinking all along. China cannot afford this war, this trade war. They really cannot. Could they sell their product in Europe? Of course they could. But they can't sell enough of it. The United States is the largest buyer of goods around the world. So if you lose your largest potential sales area, you're going to cut back dramatically in your production, which means people are going to be out of work. That, in China's case, means people are not going to eat. And that's something that no administration, communist or otherwise, can tolerate.
All right, so we'll one more in the China arena, I guess. Earnings season coming to a close. Orion said in the business report, I think it was that 75% of the S&P 500 that have reported so far exceeded expectations, which is great, but some retailers came in today below expectations or had a rough quarter at any rate, and they are in part blaming China, or said it will get worse if the embargoes continue. Tell me about the retail sector today.
I've got to tell Rob what I'm doing. The retail sector was surprisingly resilient, with the exception of a couple of the retailers. I mean, for instance, Steinmark announced that they're going to have Amazon lockers in their stores. That brings traders, shoppers into right. their stores that might spend a little bit more money rather than just pick up those packages. That was causing their stock to pop by almost 50%, 50% today. However, when Kohl's announced similar thing just over a month and a half ago, the stock popped dramatically. It is now under that level because of today's 10% sell-off. And the reason that we're seeing that 10% sell-off is that it hasn't had enough time to play out yet. Yes, it brought in additional shoppers, but not enough during the time frame for their earnings, so it didn't help them enough into this. I think Kohl's is still going to be okay, though, and that's one I'd keep my eye on.
I'm not sure what to make of this next story, but Boeing is up today on word that the government says that maybe one of these crashes, the crash in March, had to do with a bird strike, perhaps, rather than a software failure. Can you explain that for me?
Sure. Basically, Stephen, the bird strike would be like Sullenberger when that U.S. Airways plane took off out of LaGuardia,
right.
hit those birds, and then the engine shut down. In the case of Sullenberger, he was both very fortunate and very skilled and was able to land the plane. In the other case, allegedly, the Ethiopian pilots were not able to compensate, and it could still be that some of the fighting that went on between the pilots, plural, and the Boeing software could have been one of the reasons that rather than being able to do what Sullenberger did and land the plane, those Ethiopian pilots were not able to. But it does certainly take a little bit of the pressure off of Boeing as far as if indeed this is the case, then it's the Lion Air flight is the only one we know of that was the software wholly at fault. Rather than potentially, in this case, perhaps a combination of bird strike and the software fighting with the pilots as they sought to control the plane on that dive after the birds shut the engines down.
You mentioned earlier you're watching Kohl's. Give me another one. What are you looking at today?
CSX. This is a big railway play.
John, I got stuck behind a freight train today, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, what you wouldn't believe since you got stuck behind one is that the railroad loadings and intermodal and so forth are down 13 straight weeks. So that means a lot of the stuff that probably was coming in from China is being reflected in those numbers down 4% year over year. I think that's about to turn around. Not because I think it's going to be solved with the trade issue quite as quickly, but I do think overall that does get a lift for those rail stocks back. After, like I say, 13 straight weeks of bad results. So that's why we're buying CSX today.
John Najarian, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
It's 12:24. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, you can't judge a book by a cover, but sometimes you can judge it by a title.
Yes.
Kelly Leonard is here from Second City and the podcast Getting to Yes And. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And the title of the book in question is?
An Economist Walks into a Brothel.
I love, and she literally did, right?
She did.
We're talking about here Alison Schrager.
Yep.
Who tried to write a book on risk to help financial service advisors understand conveying risk to their clients.
Yeah.
And so she looked at people, including the prostitutes at the Bunny Ranch.
Yeah. So it turns out you can learn a lot about risk, financial risk, from sex workers. And one of the things that she highlighted, which is when you are a sex worker at the Bunny Ranch, you have to turn over half of your profit. And some of these women, the top women, make about $600,000 a year. So they are giving away...
Wait a minute, what?
$600,000 a year.
Wow.
Yep. So they're giving away $300,000. So you might think that that's a bad risk. Like, why would you do that? But it's a good risk because they are safe. And safe in all the ways. So literally men drive them home at the end of the evening. They are taken care of in terms of health issues. They have a community that they work with.
And this guy who runs the place, now he's recently deceased.
Yeah, Denisov.
They had financial planning meetings twice a week, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, these are business women. The other thing that I thought was fascinating is she went in with the assumption that probably the most successful sex workers would be sort of young women,
right.
And no, it's the older women, because the thing that most of the men who are coming there really want is sort of an emotional, empathetic
right.
experience. And these women were better communicators and more empathetic communicators because they had some age on them.
And how does she turn that in then to advice for financial planners understanding risk?
Yeah, it's because you got to understand all the factors. So the thing I got out of this book, which is that we have to really question our default settings, the default way we understand things, because things are more complicated. So again, you would go in thinking the young women did better. You would go in thinking you're never going to want to give up half of your proceeds. But in fact, when you look at all the different factors, you do. So it's a lot of zagging when you thought you were going to be zigging.
Right.
And the book kind of ends with the story about David Bowie that I thought was really cool. And I kind of heard about this. We were talking before.
Right,
about both
right,
of us
right.
But this is explained out. So
Bowie I don't know if you call him a pioneer, but he was certainly a leader in so
totally,
many things.
Oh, yeah. Totally, yeah. I mean, if you think of when he started in the late 60s and early 70s, very unusual.
I guess I said don't necessarily call him a pioneer, because a pioneer implies someone who excelled in one area or something. And
oh,
people
yeah.
caught up. This guy, just everything he did was setting a trend.
Kind of a polymath that way.
Yeah.
So the thing that was interesting about Bowie with regard to risk is most, the way the music industry used to be, is these young artists, the producers would find them, they'd give them a huge advance, and then they'd basically own their royalties. So they give away their future success for taking the early success now. This is why all these guys end up going broke.
Well, they're playing the summer festivals in Woodstock in the afternoon,
yep,
things
yep.
like that.
So Bowie, and this is before he was David Bowie that we know now, said, no, I'm not going to take an advance. I'm holding on to all my royalties. So he didn't get any money up top. Then he owned all his royalties, which was a fortune by the time that the 80s rolled around.
And but then he sold bonds or something, right?
So Bowie, always being ahead of the trend, saw that the music industry was changing and that, in fact, his royalties were probably going to become fairly worthless. So what he did, this is so genius, and this is like in the early 2000s.
And we see that they're worthless, right? Because
yeah.
Spotify,
exactly.
Pandora, they're not paying anything.
No one's making anything.
Very little.
He basically created a bond. So he gave away, you could buy into this bond and you would own 10 years of David Bowie's royalties, which gave him $50 million.
Wow.
So he got $50 million, he gave away for 10 years, and then those royalties revert back to his estate, so maybe the industry changes by them and there's a new value.
And you talked to Alison Schrager about this in the podcast.
Yep.
The name of the podcast, Getting to Yes, and is it dropped yet or is it coming this afternoon?
Should have just dropped just right now.
Check it out at WGNradio.com. Thanks for coming by, Kelly Leonard.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, David Jennings. It's 12:37. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Amy Guth, you know, is the host of The Daily Gist, the podcast from Crane Chicago Business, and she joins us a little bit later in the program. We're talking about the future of Rahm Emanuel. Every time I look at my email, Rahm Emanuel has another new job. But on the phone line right now is Margaret Mueller. She is the CEO of the Executives Club of Chicago. Margaret, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi. Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You haven't hired Rahm Emanuel yet, have you?
No, we have not. Although we did throw him a goodbye luncheon 2 weeks ago. It was great.
Tell me then, were the people at the Executives Club happy to see him go, or were they sad to see him go?
I think they were, happy to acknowledge all the service that he's given for the last 8 years, and they had they wanted him to make predictions about the new mayor, and he wouldn't bite, so they were hoping that he would give them something.
A little dish there. But much was made of this letter that Rocky Wirtz sent and, was made public and all of that. I mean, what mm-hmm. was the business community's view of Mayor Emanuel?
Well, I think the business community is as varied as the citizens of Chicago. So there is no monolithic business community with a single point of view. So there are members of the business community, I think, that have a range of perspectives. And in terms of the new mayor, I think the message that Rahm gave at the lunch that resonated really well with the business community was, if you work with her, she will be good for business. So the only way this works is if you come together and work with the mayor. And I think that was the message.
Who asks whom to dance in this case? Does business move toward the fifth floor, or is it incumbent upon Lori Lightfoot to reach out to you guys?
I think his message to the business community has been, you all need to start doing this and taking the initiative. So I think that's been...
Yeah.
The message that he's given is, start doing it. You know, you can't just rely on the mayor to do it.
What is it that Lightfoot needs to do to, obviously it's more of a blank slate, I think, than most changes in administration. So what are you looking for from the fifth floor when it comes to business in Chicago?
I think that the business community is really primed to work with her, to continue Chicago's legacy as being a hub, a center of excellence for business, innovation, economic development. There's been a lot of focus on promoting ourselves and growing to ensure that we remain a tier one tech city, both for the nation and the world. And our focus on tech and innovation and all the exciting things that are going on is where I think a lot of the conversation and focus is going to be.
Are you worried about her emphasis on the neighborhoods? I mean, it seems to me like perhaps. I'm likely mistaken, but it seems to me like a group like the Executives Club is more of a downtown membership than it would be in the far-reaching suburbs. Are you worried that she might pay too much attention to the suburbs at the expense of downtown?
So our executives, our members of the Executives Club, they are from Fortune 500 companies. They are from entrepreneurial startups and everything in between. And we have a really strong focus on diversity, and we are going through a lot of effort right now to measure our membership and make sure that we are reflective of the entire Chicago executive business community. We're doing pretty well on men, women. We're almost 50-50, but we do know that we have some work to do on race, ethnicity, and company size. We've historically been more of a big company association,
right,
and we're doing a lot more to pull in small, mid-sized companies, the high-growth companies that actually reflect the growing Chicago business community.
Well, right, so I was going to ask you, so is that a reflection of a growing awareness of the benefits of diversity, or is that a reflection of the fact that the types of businesses are changing and more of them all smaller businesses or medium-sized businesses?
Right. So our mission has always been the same, but as the Chicago business community has evolved, we need to evolve and make sure that we are providing all of our members with the types of resources that they need to be one step ahead and evolve. And we've been having some interesting conversations around the office about what is an executive, you know, and there's this joke about it's not your father's executive club, like this idea of someone who takes the Metra in with a briefcase and has power lunches. I mean, the portrait of an executive is evolving dramatically, really want to be at the forefront.
A lot of the growing executives have never tied a tie.
Right. exactly.
I'm jealous of them. Okay, so you talked about expecting the unexpected. Here we are. It's the last week of May, so that means that all eyes are on Springfield. And I think there was a House committee that just approved a measure to move the graduated income tax onto the full House, if I'm not mistaken. But what do you make of Governor Pritzker and this idea of a graduated income tax and taxes in general when it comes to business? Because, you know, I'm always hearing that businesses are fleeing the state because of the tax burden, but I think a lot of that might be anecdotal. You tell me about business and taxes in Illinois.
So Governor Pritzker is going to come and speak to the Executives Club on June 19th. So we're going to have a pretty packed room, and I think everyone is really eager to hear him speak about the results of all of the legislative measures. It'll be at the close of the legislative session and what it means going forward. You know, it's interesting. I think both the governor and the mayor are aligned on wanting to promote everyone, you know, and making sure that benefits are spread across all workers and citizens of the city. And I think having a governor and a mayor that are working together to achieve our goals is going to go a really long way.
Has the Executive Club, the Executives Club, taken a position on the graduated income tax?
So we don't take a position.
Generally,
we don't
okay.
lobby. Yeah, so there are some other organizations that do that. And we are more about thought leadership, providing mentoring resources, leadership development to help Chicago's business leaders grow themselves, grow their teams, grow their businesses. So we don't get involved in those conversations officially.
Sure. So you talked about the fact that the mayor and the governor are going to be on the same page. I'm assuming that's you're alluding to the fact that they're of the same party. So they'll be working together more so than did the last mayor and governor duo. Is the future bright for Chicago business? How do you gauge it?
Oh, absolutely. I think that we have gained a lot of momentum these last few years, and we are primed and ready to go. There's a lot that's being put into place to support Chicago's own entrepreneurs, as well as, you know, attract new businesses to Chicago, but it's not an either-or strategy, and to no longer be a two-city city, you know, right, to ensure right. that we are promoting economic growth for everyone in the city of Chicago and providing jobs and opportunity and growth throughout the greater Chicago area.
Margaret Muller is the CEO of the Executives Club of Chicago. Margaret, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk again. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Controversial subject alert. What are you talking about? It's 2019. Everything's a controversial topic. Yeah, you're right. Whatever. The Midwest is steadily becoming a marijuana industry hub with the number of hemp producers, dispensaries, and other industry businesses that are popping up all over. Some like it. Others don't. However, a study showed that a marijuana dispensary in the area that you live has a positive economic impact on property values. This is a wide viewpoint with a handful of speculations, since it's state by state at the moment, and much of it is driven by local perspective, but so far, it looks like a positive trend for the housing market. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. Bad transition, dude. Nah, whatever. Top Golf is bringing a variation of their very popular sports entertainment experience to the Mag Mile. The Top Golf Swing Suite is coming to the 900 Shops, where it can be used for simulations including golf, dodgeball, hockey, and baseball pitching carnival style. The Top Golf Swing Suite is planned to be open later this fall. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. In the studio is Amy Guth. She's the host of the Daily Gist podcast. I hope you've subscribed to that by now. Amy, you've subscribed to it, haven't you?
I subscribe.
Who wouldn't?
I just recently found out my own parents don't subscribe.
Really?
It was overwhelming to them, so I need to go get their devices and subscribe
Let's
for them.
Let's call them right now. We'll walk them through it. That'll be fun. It's a podcast from Crane Chicago Business in conjunction with WGN Radio, right? So you can download it, subscribe to it through WGNRadio.com.
That's right.
Okay, so Rahm Emanuel, well, he didn't, and there were no unemployment checks for Rahm Emanuel, apparently.
Not a minute. That guy picked the baton up and kept going. So here this morning, he has announced that he's going to kick off his post-mayoral career. He's now a contributing editor for The Atlantic, and he has a piece up. He's actually written for them for a while.
Right.
He's got about 12 in the last year-ish, but about 13 total pieces. The one today is called "It's Time to Hold American Elites Accountable for Their Abuses."
It was interesting to see the byline. It was Rahm Emanuel, former mayor of City of Chicago.
Yeah, I know. It was like, well, there it is in writing. He also is going to be doing some political commentator work with ABC and that kind of thing. So he's our colleague now, is what the headline is here.
Right. So we're the veterans in the industry and he's the rookie, right?
That's right. He could be our intern.
Can we haze? We haze the mayor, right? Because he certainly has hazed a number of us over the years.
We can make him like go fill in weird shifts on
right.
you know, during holidays and weekends and stuff. That's what we can make him
check
do.
Check the death notices at the ME's office and things like that.
That's right. Yeah, he's going to have to do that.
Well, you know, I've seen him on ABC pop up on This Week from time to time, so that's probably not a big surprise either, but he has been sort of courting all of these networks over the past few months, right?
Yeah, Daily Beast has a really interesting piece that kind of gives a little bit of a timeline of who he's been talking to. There was kind of talk of Good Morning America as a political analyst, which I cannot imagine that.
Yeah.
He doesn't have... Whoever the network is, you know, I think we all know he's for broadcast, you got to have that delay button,
right.
that dump button ready.
I like him. I think he's got interesting things to say. I don't think Good Morning America is one of them.
No, I can't see that being a fit. But hey, whatever. Maybe,
right.
you know, maybe this, maybe broadcast will be a fine fit for him. But yeah, so he's going to be contributing at The Atlantic. He's going to be doing some broadcast, and that's that.
It's nice to see, and I read the piece today that, you know, he's got a book. He's working on a book, too. And
yep.
a lot of people leave a position of... notoriety, I guess, and write, but not all of them can write.
Right. You sometimes hire someone to do it for you. But I think that's like the requisite step. You leave public office and you have to have a book either before or after.
But it looks to me like he's a writer, too.
It seems that way. Yeah. I mean, if he's got a ghostwriter, it's really well hidden. But it seems like it's coming from him.
Or the ghostwriter would take the F out of the keyboard.
Yeah. Be like, sir, if you could just not,
not that,
find
please.
Every instance of that word and change it to darn it or something.
This piece today is interesting, though, about how the Democrats can recapture the middle class. And it wasn't about pretending that you're them or things like that. It was demanding justice for the people in power who haven't suffered, whether it was the banks with the financial crisis or you pick something like that.
Yeah, it was an interesting piece. I recommend everyone read it. I thought always interesting with a talk piece like that is the reaction to it. And it used to be the simply don't read the comments, but now it's like a bigger conversation in the ecosystem of tweets and Facebook posts and things like that. That's been pretty interesting reaction. Some people are like, you know what, I kind of like him better as a writer. Some people are like, I disagree. Then here's why.
Right.
But it stirred up a lot of conversation. So, I mean, I guess that's what you want. You want some controversy around your work.
Rahm Emanuel, former mayor of City of Chicago and a contributor to The Atlantic. Amy Guth, the host of The Daily Gist. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.